When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Surprise! Hey, it's BWI Live. I'm Thomas Frank Carr, and we're doing an impromptu show today. So we're going to see how many people just show up. This is going to be interesting. I'm here by myself. Normally, I have one of my coworkers, one of the great reporters at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com with me. But NFL draft, it's Friday. Everyone's out and about doing things. And I wanted to talk about the draft. So I just figured, hey, let's see what happens. I don't know who's going to be joining us on the show today, too, because, you know, we're talking about the NFL, got some crossover with some, maybe some New York Jets fans or some Miami Dolphins fans. We're talking about the first round, Olufashinu going to the New York Jets and Chop Robinson going to the Miami Dolphins and how those players fit. Maybe a more nuanced conversation about those players' skill sets from somebody who's watched them for the past 2 years. So if you don't know, if you haven't been here before to the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel, you're watching this on replay, cut it up for whatever. I'm a Penn State film analyst, do the X's and O's for BlueWhiteIllustrated.com on Penn State football. So I watch every single play. I watch the full game film, break it down from concepts, player schemes, talents, all that stuff. So I have pretty in-depth knowledge of these players going in the NFL draft for Penn State. If you don't know this, and people who watch the show regularly know, I am a lifelong diehard Buffalo Bills fan. So fairly familiar with the Dolphins and Jets. So this is very interesting. And if you're wondering, like, is this guy a homer? I'm really annoyed at how well these two fit in the AFC East. So I'm not, like, looking forward to telling you how Chop Robinson's going to be a problem for the Bills or how I don't think the Bills have a pass rusher that can get pressure on Fashanu once he gets into the starting lineup. So those are some of the things we're going to be talking about today. If you want to, share this video with your friends, and let's have a conversation. You got any questions about the draft, about Penn State football? You want to get your thoughts or opinions on the air? I know we got some regulars here in the chat. Steve, he's here. He says, great night for these two young men. Good for old Penn State. Yeah, I think that this was a really good look. The Olu slide was, as we said, wildly overblown, that he was not going to draft. Steelers fans and Eagles fans were getting all excited, right? That he was going to be there in the late teens and 20s and got to 11, I think. And everyone was saying this is a great value for a pick at 11 for the New York Jets. Kevin is here. He says, I'm sure you do a dandy of a job soloing it. I haven't done a solo show in a while. So I need your help hanging out with me, getting your thoughts on the show today. We'll be talking to you in the chat as always. I'm never really, you know, when we do these live shows, never really alone, because I always got you. The co-host of the show is now the chat. So some of the things I want to talk about to start with Olufashinu going to the New York Jets. Not every first round draft pick is a great fit. You know, like some teams see something in a player and maybe they put them in a position where they think, oh, they'll develop into this. And then they're asked to do things they're not good at. The fit with the Jets from running zone running schemes, you know, being heavy into outside zone, vertical passing attack, even down to having other offensive linemen on the roster so they don't have to put them in the lineup right away if they don't want to. This is a great fit. Although I would say the thing that I think isn't a great fit is I think he is a guy that can start right away in the NFL. I know there's some conversations about his strength and there's some things maybe you heard on the broadcast last night. I don't know which one you were watching. I guess let's start with the concerns. Let's start with the concerns and how I think some of that's a little bit overblown. Play strength is something I hear a lot about Olufashinu not having enough play strength. Nick Saban, I was watching the ABC coverage the other day, last night, saying like narrow build, not as strong, you know, some of these things where I think if you watch just the Ohio State game and you saw him lose some of those bull rush reps to JT Tulumoliau and I think Sawyer is the other defensive end, you could easily convince yourself that this is a finesse football player. But if you rewind 365 days and you watch the 2022 game against Ohio State that Penn State played, you'll see Olufashinu go up against the same defensive ends, literally the same players who came back, and surrender no pressures. And the only problem he had in that game was he got hurt and left, and then was basically, he was done for the rest of the season after that game. He was hurt late in the fourth quarter. So I don't understand how you can feel that way when both of those things exist, where you have a bad game, yes, and he gave up, according to PFF, 6 pressures. No quarterback hits, by the way. He's given up 1 quarterback hit in his entire starting career. So from a pass protection standpoint, this is the best pass protector in the draft. At least from, you know, the bias you'll find here is I haven't watched all these guys. Like, I haven't watched Joe Alt in depth. I, you know, love the draft, been following along. I know that there's some other really good pass protectors in this draft, but from a technical standpoint, talking to his former offensive line mate, Landon Tangwall, you can check out the video we did breaking down Olu's hand usage. This is a guy who's intentional with the way he uses his hands. There's some things he needs to clean up in his technique, but in terms of his ability to pass protect and the building blocks are all there. And he's very good at recovering when he makes a mistake. So from a pass protection standpoint, I think this is a really good fit for the Jets because this is the thing they need the most in this offense. So kind of going into the Jets and Nathaniel Hackett and what they tried to do with Aaron Rodgers when he was in Green Bay and some of the concepts in this Jets offense that you saw last year, even with Zach Wilson. This is an outside zone running scheme with a deep passing attack, play action passes off of those concepts. So pretty similar, actually, to what Penn State was doing last year with offense coordinator Mike Yurcich. And Olu's very athletic. This is a really athletic football player that can move. He can get reach blocks. He is good, I think, in that system from a technical standpoint of getting to those blocks. Is he a mauler? Is he a dude who is going to throw dudes 2 or 3 yards down the field? Maybe eventually, but no. But in that system, you... Just this is a general conversation point. You value the technical guys that can create seams for Breece Hall, who's an explosive running back with really good vision, as opposed to somebody who just collapses the side of the line of scrimmage, where whether he's working on the backside and getting double teams and helping the guard reach to the second level, or he's on the front side and you know, he's helping a combo block and getting to the second level. These are things he can do. I think the second level stuff is the area where if I'm going to say Fashinu needs to get better in a technical standpoint, getting and latching onto guys at the second level was the thing I think he struggled with the most at Penn State, where he needs to, you know, clean up his angles and clean up kind of where his eyes go when he gets out in open space. But he's got the ability to do these things. And he's a smart kid that's going to get a lot better. So the vertical passing game, I was looking at some of the ways and the players they've added. Mike Williams, vertical receiver. You look at his time with the Chargers, his most useful routes came on deep balls, isolation routes down the field, and a high average depth of target. That's what this offense is trying to do. So vertical passing game spreads you out, vertical running game spreads you out laterally, and then attack down the field. Both of these things Fashanu's good at. Fashanu. I'm going to say it both ways because I said Fashanu for the longest time. The fit here is really good. Bringing in Tyron Smith is, and then having Fashanu on the roster, gives you the flexibility of having two elite left tackle pass protectors, knowing that Tyron Smith is going to get injured because he's 33 years old and he has been chronically injured in his career. So I don't think that this is a project. I don't think this is a player that is not going to start for the Jets at some point this year. I think he's going to play. And you don't see as much time sharing in the NFL, right? The offensive linemen, you got five starters, they start. But in this situation, I could absolutely see him starting multiple games for the Jets. Maybe even it starts out that it's kind of a timeshare and you get him some reps in certain games. And then as the season goes on, he might be the starter depending on how things are going. But he doesn't have to be. There are, like we said, there are areas in his game. I personally think he plays a little too high at 6'6". I think a lot of that height is in his lower half. He can improve his pad level, which I think would improve the run game and the leverage that he has. But I also think that a lot of guys play with that height in the NFL. A lot of guys play from two-point stances and are still able to generate leverage. Got long arms. I think he's the best offensive lineman I've seen at Penn State, bar none. Which, you know, they've had some good offensive linemen, but they haven't had a guy who is a top 10 pick under James Franklin in on that side of the ball in the trenches. And this is the best offensive lineman from a talent perspective that I've seen coming out. Rashid Walker, I think, has similar skills, but maybe not as much high-end potential. So this is a really good football player of value as the third tackle to go off the board at, what was it, 11? They traded down. I know they were at 10. They traded down. So they trade down and get, I think, the best pass-protecting tackle in the draft. And if you're looking for a left tackle, I understand that the run game is important. I believe me. I do a lot of work on the run game. But if you want to protect a 40-year-old quarterback who wants to throw the football down the field on a lot of deep overs and long progressing routes, this is the guy that's going to hold up in those situations and is going to be able to protect the blind side of the quarterback. I think that this is an area where the Dolphins, moving on to Chop Robinson, maybe got a better fit. And that's saying something, considering that I'm very high on the way Fashanu fits with Jets. Here's the thing. It's not just a scheme fit. Although Anthony Weaver, this is where I'll tell you, like, I'm not an expert on necessarily Anthony Weaver or the Ravens or what the Dolphins do overall from a schematic perspective. I've taken a look at some of the information. Generally, like, they're running a wide front, so you're putting your defensive ends in space. But the Ravens have always done unique things with their fronts, where they've had some odd fronts. They've played odd fronts from even alignments. Like, they do some unique stuff in Baltimore, and I don't know exactly how much of that is coming over to the Dolphins. So I think the undersized part, let's start with that. Like, Chop Robinson is undersized. I don't know what that means anymore. So Adisa Isaac, his teammate, 249 pounds, 6'4". To me, like, I'm not saying Adisa can't play in the NFL. But I am saying that is, to me, undersized. Chop Robinson is 255. Like, that's what he weighed this offseason and ran a 4.49. So I understand his play style is different. But if you're telling me he's undersized, like, that's not undersized to me. Like, he's got good length. He is explosive. You know, you heard all the good things about him on the broadcast yesterday of how fast he is, how explosive he is. But I think that there's more upside in his game as far as, like, size-wise. I don't think he's undersized for a player in the NFL. But, you know, when you hear undersized speed rusher, you think this guy might drop into coverage. And at Penn State, they did a lot of zone dropping last year. So a lot, by the way, is 15 snaps, I believe it was, by the end of the season. It felt like a lot more because of what Manny Diaz was doing at Penn State. But Chop Robinson looks good dropping into zone coverage. That's not his bag. He is a pass rusher, and the way that I think they're going to use him is unbelievably advantageous for the Dolphins. Because here's the thing. You got Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb, two longtime veterans in the NFL. Jalen Phillips is that all-around guy who's 265, who's got the length, the size, all of those things. And Chubb is a good run defender, good physical player, really thick, strong defensive end who, you know, I think has a similar body type to Chop Robinson, can play a similar role. So that he doesn't need to play rundowns if they don't want him to. And then I think Shaq Barrett, they signed him this offseason as a guy who can be that pass rusher, drop specialist, zone dropper if you want, so that you can dabble in a couple of these guys doing these things. But he can walk in and be a third down specialist for the Miami Dolphins. He has the most explosive first step from a pure defensive end of Penn State. Micah Parsons kind of frustrates this conversation for me because I never really saw him play defensive end at Penn State. But Chop Robinson is the most explosive, fastest defensive end I've seen at Penn State. And they've put, you know, Odafe Owe into the NFL. Some guys with really freaky skills. His ability to bend and turn the corner is the best I've seen, personally. And I'm a huge fan of speed rushers. Like, it's a thing I like a lot, because when you can bend, literally, you know what I'm talking about when we say bend the corner. It's not just being able to get around tackles with speed, but the body angle and the ability to shorten the curve to the quarterback. Again, you can check out a film room I did with former offensive lineman Landon Tangwall about those skills. We dive into the all 22. There are some reps where he just ghosts tackles. And it's not just that he's beating them with speed and explosiveness, and the hand usage is, sure, it's raw, and there aren't a lot of examples of him doing different things, but I think the building blocks of the physical abilities, and Mike McDaniel talked about, like, is he polished or is he raw? And I think they called him rawlished, because the physical ability to bend the corner is there. That is something that you have or don't in certain situations. And there was one play that we went over last week with Chop Robinson where he is expecting to get some pressure back from the tackle, but he beats him so cleanly that he almost falls over. But instead of falling over, he keeps his feet and crushes the quarterback for a sack fumble. You don't just do that. So when you look at the physical abilities, and I think when you are so much of one thing and not as much of another, you tend to discredit like the so much of one thing because you're looking at all the things that aren't there. I don't know that those are things he can't do. Those are just things he hasn't done. So his third down specialist pass rush situation, I think is a perfect fit. The other thing is, like, Jalen Phillips is probably one of my favorite defensive ends I've watched come out recently. Again, super jealous of the Dolphins and their defensive line. So you have a number one pass rusher, and you have Christian Wilkins on the interior, and you have those two other guys I talked about. Chop Robinson's going to see one-on-ones, and you can, if you want to, put him as maybe your fastball. He may not be your best overall pass rusher. You can put him in one-on-one situations with guys he can just whip. He can just beat. And that's a huge thing for success and fit at the next level. Because as a first-round pick, you're going to expect him to get a certain number of sacks and have a certain amount of impact. You know, he's got to put in the work to get better with his hands and use a more diverse set of skills. Sure, that's fine. But he can also, he is fast enough that like cheat code he has translates to the NFL just fine. So with those things, I think he's set up for a lot of success. Here's the other thing. The Miami Dolphins, I don't know if you know this or not, if you're a Dolphins fan watching, they like to score a lot of points. And from a philosophical perspective, like let's zoom out from just the defense and how he fits into the front and blah, blah, blah. They want to score points. They want to make you chase them. If you've got a speed rusher, you know, I don't want to just always make the comparison to the Colts with Peyton Manning, but it's kind of the same thing, kind of same idea. They want speed everywhere. They want to run by you. And when they put points and pressure on you with speed and space, Chop Robinson fits perfectly into the overall identity, the vibe of the Miami Dolphins. Again, as a Bills fan, this is really annoying because now they've got guys that I don't think on third down you necessarily have answers for when you put them in conflict with your offensive line. So they're going to score points. They're going to put you in a situation where you have to throw the football. And they're going to have pass rushers out there that are going to win. So, you know, as long as the offense doesn't break down late in the season, like we've seen it before, like we do that before, as long as they can continue to put pressure on other teams, this is set up to be a massacre when they're able to get up on teams because they've got the speed and the explosiveness on the defensive line to get after the quarterback. So from a philosophical fit, from I think a long-term talent perspective for Chop, I think he's not given credit for it being a little bit stronger, being a little bit bigger, being able to be a more well-rounded player than he is right now. And here's the other thing is, you know, if you look at some of the metrics of what he was able to do in the run game, yes, he's not stacking and shedding. He's not playing a gap and throwing guys off and left and right. And you know, that's not what Penn State asked him to do. Penn State asked him to create havoc in the backfield, get in the backfield and create disruption in these wide fronts. That's what he's going to be asked to do. Win with speed in space. And his tackle for, I think his average depth of tackle, according to PFF, was -1 yards in the backfield. His average was a tackle for loss. So put him in those situations again to make those plays. And he can make those plays. You don't want him being on the front side of a run, sure. You don't want him trying to hold the point of attack against elite strength players in the NFL. But that's also a part of the putting him in position to succeed. So this is one of those situations where I think it's maybe the best fit of the first round for a player who has a very specific skill set. So those are the two guys, you know, from the first round. If you want to talk about any of the players that we got for the Penn State fans that are here, and I'm assuming most of you that are here are Penn State fans, we can talk about day two. Who are the guys to watch for on day two? I'll give you a couple more than probably will go on, you know, in the next two rounds. But this is, you know, the guys that I think where I think they should fit at the next level and kind of the situations I think that would be advantageous for them. Mac the Mustard says, bit of an off-topic question. Are we surprised Cooper DeJean didn't go in the first round, and where do you think he lands in this draft? No, I'm not necessarily surprised Cooper DeJean didn't go in the first round. I don't think he was the top corner. I mean, the two guys, Terry and Arnold, and Mitchell, the Toledo corner, those are the better players. I think generally there is a concern when you're playing in a system like Iowa that you don't have the full skill set to play in the secondary, and it's easier to hide some of your deficiencies in that system than it is other places. So Part of this conversation is he got hurt in the, you know, and wasn't able to perform in the offseason, go to the Senior Bowl, like Quinyon Mitchell, I think is his name, that went to the Senior Bowl and was really good in man coverage. Similar situation, but he ran in the 4.3s and he had that great Senior Bowl week, so he felt better about his projection to the NFL, being able to play press man coverage. And really, that's what happened is man corners go in the first round. Those guys that have the physical talent to play in man coverage, you think can do both then, which isn't always the case because zone instincts and zone triggers require a certain player, but you can be less athletic and play well in zone. Just these are general kind of like cut through the nuance conversations. So first round corners usually are those guys that play really, really, really well in man coverage or have the skills to play well in man coverage and give you the versatility. I think there was probably a concern about DeJean because in the Iowa defense, they're playing a lot of off coverage. It can be man and it can be match, which means you're playing in a zone, but you're playing man concepts. But you're not in a dude's face and having to turn and run with him 40 yards down the field like you see like all the classic corner superstars. So then it becomes, what system does that fit, and what priority do those systems put on those players? So zone systems, like a good corner, just like anybody else, but is it the main part of their system? No, the defensive line getting pressure to make sure those zone guys can jump routes and putting pressure on the quarterback, that might be a little bit more important than getting a guy who's an elite zone corner. This is, again, a general idea, but zone corners don't always go in the first round. They're guys you find later on. A guy like Kalen King might be a zone corner who would be good for a team that you can get in the maybe seventh round, sixth, fifth, I don't know. So DeJean and in his fit and his skill set and what he was asked to do in college, some of those things work against him. So that would be why I say I'm not surprised that he went in the first round. He's fast. He's athletic. I think the general athleticism is there. But then it becomes, you know, what don't we know at a position where corner is all about athleticism. Like, you got to be really good about that. Here's the thing. Pete, any comments on why Mel Kiper had negative comments on Olu and Chop? I didn't hear what he had to say. I've heard what he had to say. I didn't watch that particular show. But it's the idea that players who play finesse are finesse, and that they can't be stronger, they can't get stronger. This is just a general thing I've heard about these two players, and I'm trying not to say mean things about Mel Kiper on air. There are certain things I feel like listening to Mel Kiper over the years that he wants from players. Size, strength, speed, you know, not as much about the football player as it is about the athlete. And if you perceive that Olu Fashanu, again, if you watch just one game, you watch the Ohio State game and you go, wow, this dude has no base. He can't anchor. He's getting pushed into the pocket. And you go, this guy isn't any good. But you didn't do the homework to watch the rest of the film to kind of do some research on it. Then, yeah, you come away with a certain perspective. And Chop Robinson is, if you are looking for specific hand usage, if you're looking for, I have to see X, Y, and Z in the run game, and I have to see X, Y, and Z as a pass rusher, he does not give those things to you. But again, if you look at his film, you know, from previous seasons, I think you see a little bit more hand usage from, you know, other times when he couldn't just beat players. You know, like he got bigger and stronger this offseason. He got more explosive, and so he had more easy assignments. So, you know, I think there's things in his past where you could see some more rudimentary usage of his hands. But again, people aren't watching 2022 film. They're watching 23, and he got hurt halfway through the season. So you didn't get to see, it was the Michigan game where he got hurt, taking on a block in the backfield, by the way, in the run game. So, you know, just generally, if you think that you have to play the run a certain way, neither of these guys are going to do it for you. If you have to do X, Y, and Z, then yeah, it's one of those things, that you're not going to like either of these guys. And that's why one of the reasons I wanted to come on here and talk about these players is those ideas. Those ideas that, like, they're finesse and you know, I think, or that they need to add strength in Olu's case. And I don't think that that's correct. I think the application of the strength needs to improve. I think Olu needs to get better as a run blocker with his pad level on initial contact. But he's great with his hands. He works his hands really well. Technically, I think there's some things he does in the run game that are good. But if you're looking for highlights of him crushing the offensive line, here's one of those situations. You know, I talked about this a little bit at the beginning. Rashid Walker had mega blocks on film for Penn State in 2021. So if you wanted to create a highlight reel of this is a left tackle that can do both, then yeah, you'd say Rashid Walker would be the better prospect. But he went in the seventh round because the consistency, the technique, the attention to detail, the intrinsic motivation were all better in the guy that's the 11th overall pick. But if you want to say, I have to see dominant run blocks, you're going to get that from Rashid Walker. You're not going to get that from Olu Fashanu. By the way, I still think Rashid Walker is a starter in the NFL. Like, I know he is a starter. Sometimes that's by circumstance, but, you know, I think he's good enough. He's athletic enough. He was one of the most athletic players before Fashanu that I'd ever seen at Penn State. Just never got the consistency that you got from Fashanu, which is why disparity in where they were drafted. And no, I can't, for the chat, no, I probably could say that on YouTube, by the way. Some things in the chat. I'm not going to. This is a generally family-friendly show. I'm saving my swears for something else that is more worth it. So let's talk about Penn State and the rest of the draft, the other players in the draft. So if you're wondering who is next, the consensus next player is Adisa Isaac. I've seen 38th overall, so early in round two. I'm a little surprised by that, given the conversation about Chop Robinson being undersized. This is the whole thing. Is like, what size are you looking for? Because at 6'4", 249, he's bigger, he's longer, he's got a classic defensive end frame, you know, 33-plus inch arms, but he's a little more narrow. Chop is a little thicker of a person. Like, having seen Chop in person, he kind of looked like his Twitter handle's Chop Young Bull. He's yoked up top. He's got those big, like, squared off upper body. And Adisa, great athlete. I'm not saying he's not strong. He is actually very strong for his size. He's a good run defender. He does all the little things well. But the NFL is always picky about, we want guys that are 265 and the perfect, like, shaped human being for the position. And the fact that he's 38th overall and might go early in this draft, I think that tells you that he's better. You know, that whole punches above his weight thing. I think he's got good twitch off the line. This is the thing, is like, we could have a conversation. What does he fit in system-wise? Where does he land? Just look at what the situation Chop is in. That's good for Adisa too. You know, I think that from a frame perspective and from a height and change of direction perspective, I don't know that I would want him dropping. I think both of these guys, you could see them as undersized guys that can play kind of a tweener role. They're both guys that go get the quarterback. That is what they were asked to do at Penn State. They were asked to drop a little bit. I think Chop has a little more, as a guy who at Maryland played a full-on Sam linebacker and was covering guys in the slot at like 240, he's more of that dude, but I think both these guys are pure pass rushers. So Adisa is the next guy. Any team that runs a four-down front that wants a guy to get after the quarterback and use his length to create some power, Adisa does more with his hands. I also think he kind of had to do more with his hands because he doesn't have that 4.49 speed. He's got great, I think he's got really good twitch off the line, recovering from Achilles injury for 2 years. You know, that was one that he came back a long way from and showed who he was early in his career this past season. So good situation for him, generally kind of the same thing as Chop Robinson. Then you got Theo Johnson, I think is the next guy who's the consensus next Penn State player. He is somebody that I'm super curious in how the NFL feels about Theo Johnson. So for Penn State fans, this is a review for anyone who's watching this and you're curious about Theo Johnson. He is 6'6", 260, and runs a 4.57 at the combine. That's bananas. Like, he's a 4.5 athlete at 6'6", 265, 266. Really tall, like a linear player. And I think that's the interesting thing about Theo, is that some team is going to see him and say, that is an inline tight end. That's a Y. That's a guy who's going to be, he's going to be blocking defensive ends. We're going to have him lined up next to the tackle, and he's going to be our, you know, down in, down out guy. And the problem is, I don't know that he's that guy. I think he's much more of a space player. So Eggman says, how is Theo's current size for the NFL standards? Is he Bavaro-esque tight end that DBs just bounce off of? In the right situation, he could be. I don't really remember Mark Bavaro that well. So he's a vertical threat. super fast in a straight line. His three-cone drill was better than I expected. Like, he can cut laterally. He can run a full route tree. But is he exploding out of those things? Is he accelerating away from defensive backs like some of the modern tight ends who are a little bit smaller, a little bit lighter, a little bit more receiver-like? He's not Brock Bowers for sure. So I think of these guys, his fit at the next level is going to be the most interesting because I can see a team making a mistake and saying he's our inline guy and we're going to have him try and block defensive ends. He could do it. Like, he's strong enough. He's big enough. He put on the weight. It's just he's never put it on tape that he can do those things. I've watched a lot. Here's an example. Penn State ran last year a much more simplistic offensive run scheme. They ran inside zone. They ran outside zone. A little bit of mid zone. A little bit of man concepts. The year before, they were running pin and pull. They were getting guys on the edge. They were using players on counter blocks. And for the last 2 years, Theo's really struggled on those blocks to pin defensive ends on the inside to allow the offensive line to pull out in space. Hunter Norzad, we'll get to him in a second, and a lot of these offensive linemen are really athletic. That would have been a really good scheme for them to use. Nick Singleton, super athletic, but they couldn't get those pin blocks. They couldn't get the tight ends to actually block on the backside of plays or on the front side consistently to spring these guys for big plays. So they cut it out of the playbook, and it became very simplistic. You know, it's like, we're going to run zone. We're going to run a couple of very basic things. And what they decided they were going to do is they're going to disguise the formation by same side handoffs, front side handoffs in odd situations for zones, or having really balanced formations with two tight ends either in the backfield or on the line of scrimmage. And you don't know which way we're going to run. And then, oh, look at that. It's a zone. Expected that because that's what they run. So that is, I think, the frustration is he could be, I hate to say this, at his physical best in terms of his strength and his ability to do things, he could be Gronk-like. Because the thing that Rob Gronkowski did, I think, better than anybody else was be that vertical threat down the seam or on corner routes or just be super explosive and linear. And yeah, dudes can't tackle him and bounce off of him and he ran down the field. But Theo doesn't have that physicality to his game. He doesn't have that quasi-offensive lineman. This is a kid who was a Canadian wide receiver 5 years ago. So I think I saw a pre-draft. Jimmy Graham was his comp. I don't hate that comp. So he's going to need to be split out. He's needing a guy in space, somebody who runs routes against DBs and is just bigger. Maybe a guy who's really good at picking for other players and getting guys open in short concepts that would be, you know, again, I'm trying to think of the way they use Jimmy Graham, right? Where they were using Jimmy Graham kind of as a basketball screener to get guys like Reggie Bush the ball or, you know, Michael Thomas and things like that. You know, I think the Bears could use a guy that can play in space. I know they got a lot of weapons, but, you know, as long as they're fine with the way he blocks, that'd be a good one. The Denver Broncos, Sean Payton, I think, you know, to make that kind of go right in line with each other. I think those are some good fits. Tom says, sound like someone like the 49ers or Chiefs would draft to be a down the seam option. Yeah, like it. I don't know the situation with the 49ers tight end two, but everyone on that team needs to block. Everybody on that team absolutely has to block. So George Kittle is their Y tight end. He's a great blocker. Everyone knows that. But they have drafted traditionally guys that are better blockers as their number two tight end than they do receivers. Even considering that their number two tight end is actually Kyle Juszczyk, who is the fullback, the H-back, which in that system, if you're running a third tight end, are you drafting Theo in the second round to be your third blocking option between the H-back, the tight end, and the tight end too? And that's why he had no explosive plays this year. Are you talking about Nick Singleton? Yeah. And kind of, if you look at the way that Penn State used Theo Johnson in 2022, they used him down the seam. He averaged 17 yards a catch. This was an explosive down the field threat. So that's the part I'm talking about. If we're talking about just 2023 film and you're watching just 2023 film, there's hundreds of players you got to watch if you're an NFL draft analyst. And I don't blame people for not going back into the annals of a guy's history to look at all of the film, because you're like, okay, this guy's big and he doesn't block the way I want him to. And like, you kind of put him in a box and you don't see the other ways he was used. And I think as a, you know, explosive down the field threat, a guy that can go over the middle of the field and be a huge value, I think that's a really good thing. That's where he could excel in the NFL. But if he's not given that option, and here's the other thing, it's a very specific option. So are you going to tailor a position for a third round tight end? Maybe, probably not. The other thing is, because he's so athletic and because he could put up great numbers at the combine, those things are super important to the tight end position. Physical freak outliers is one of the number one things that transitions to the NFL. So he could be a guy that gets much better at blocking, and or even, here's the other thing, you know, so I'm talking at both sides of my mouth. Having watched a lot of tight ends blocking in the NFL and a lot of wide receivers condensing down in the formation, everyone wants to run these big formations and try and bounce to the outside with your running back in these man schemes. These guys that are blocking aren't better than Theo Johnson. Like, there aren't a lot of really great blocking tight ends in the NFL. There's a couple, and we know their names. And then for the rest of everybody else, it's like, you get in the way. So if he could do that and also be a great receiving threat, some team might see him as their tight end one. You know, after Brock Bowers, who I think is less of a tight end and more of an H-back, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of guys that have that height, weight, speed in this draft from the tight end position, but Theo Johnson is one of those guys that could go day two. Andrew Berger says Rapidway seems to be closer to a better blocking tight end. Yeah. From a tenacity standpoint, I don't think there's anybody close to Breton Strange like Andrew Rapelier. We'll see what Tyler Warren can do, because he could be that guy. Like, he could be. He's got the size. I think he's got a little more grit to him than some of the other tight ends Penn State's had. You know, if we're putting them in buckets of the Pat Freiermuth of the world, Rapelier and Tyler Warren are a little closer to that. But again, it's not just... Here's the thing, like, going back to the whole conversation about tight ends. And by the way, appreciate you guys being here for 40 minutes. I thought this was going to be like a 20-minute show, but I should have realized it's me. I'm not going to be like, you know what? Here's four bullet points and then we're out. They tried more than one tight end to get those offensive schemes to work last year. Going back to talking about Tyler Warren not being able to pin the defensive end or the outside man in the line of scrimmage down to spring everybody into open space, they also tried Tyler Warren in those situations, and he also struggled to consistently do it. He, I think, had better highs in terms of he was able to get it a couple times. There was a couple plays against Ohio State where he was good. They sprung Catron Allen into the open field because he was motioning in and getting some of those down blocks, and they had like brief flashes of creativity or like, oh, that's good. That makes sense. And then they just didn't do it a whole lot. So Tyler Warren can be that guy, but it has to be more consistent. And you know, going back to Theo Johnson in this particular situation, I don't know how that projects. I don't know. So I think that's a big question mark of whether he is a priority on day two or if he's a guy that slides down into the third round. The other thing is there's a lot of receivers. And I think in years where you have the option to draft a receiver or a receiving tight end, why wouldn't you? A.D. Mitchell still on the board. Ladd McConkey still on the board. Some of the other players that I think, Taz Williams from UNC is an explosive deep threat down the field. So if you want an explosive deep threat that goes down the field, you've got a receiver or you got a tight end who you don't know if you can block. So I think that's another part of this, of the draft class and all those things from that particular perspective. And then we get to the offensive linemen that aren't Olufashinu, Caden Wallace, and Hunter Norzad. I've seen a lot of Hunter Norzad being ranked ahead of Caden Wallace. And I think this is where the NFL is going to be higher on both of those guys than Penn State fans were on either of them. But to me, the guy that I'm interested to see where he fits into the NFL is Caden Wallace, because he did well enough to have tackle versatility at the next level. You can give him the option to fail at tackle, as opposed to, I think, a year and a half ago sitting here where James Franklin said, like, he's athletic, one of the most athletic offensive linemen we've recruited. And I guess I think I even asked him, like, how do you know if you never see it? And, you know, this is where they see it more in practice than we get to see it in games. And his point was, like, you see it, and it's on us to get it out of him more regularly. And this past year, they got it out of him more regularly, and it showed. Like, Penn State was able to pass protect with two really good tackles. And again, you want to check out our breakdown with Landon Tangwall of Caden Wallace. In the game against Ohio State, they were not sliding protection to him and leaving Olu on an island. They were blocking these things even. So JT Tolomoliau going up against Caden Wallace, Caden won most of those individual reps. So I think teams are going to see him, long story short, teams are going to see him as a guy who can play tackle, but if it doesn't work there, he's got guard versatility. He can kick inside. He's built like a guard. I've always thought he was a guard. I think originally, you know, back in his recruiting process, he was seen as a guy that was 6'5", and his build was a guard. Penn State played him at tackle. So you got that versatility. And then speaking of, and I always thought he was like a secret starter in this draft of, this is a guy who's going to go in the fourth or fifth round, and eventually he's going to start for a team. Now I don't think he's that much of a secret. You saw some of the pre-draft buzz, go back and see some of the things he did at the combine, where I thought he was probably one of the better pass protectors, looked more fluid, looked better than some of those guys who maybe were a little more stiff. My biggest problem is, like, he has just athletically not been able to get to certain blocks in the run game, where Olu, maybe the technique needs to get better. My concern was I didn't think Caden was athletic enough to get to some of those reach blocks. But he might be a little more scheme versatile. He's got the size. I think he could play in a man scheme. Some of his best plays were down blocks on counters where he is legitimately moving a defensive end off the spot, and then, you know, guys are coming in behind him and then he's getting to the second level. Those things I think he's got the talent to do and to be good at, but also show that he can get to those reach blocks on the backside or on the front side of a zone scheme. So I would actually, in terms of, like, generally which one of these guys goes first, I'd say Caden might go first. But Hunter Norzad, you know, we talked about athleticism on the offensive line. He is explosive. The problem is he has been hurt a lot. So he hasn't been able to do any sort of, like, testing during the NFL draft process or to really show it consistently at Penn State. But it's always, he is a hot and cold player. I don't think I've ever seen a guy as hot and cold on the football field as Hunter Norzad, where you look at some of the things, again, go back and watch Illinois was a game that I thought he did really well being a technically good blocker, getting to his reach blocks. Is he dominating anybody? No. But is he able to flip his hips and get on the other side of a three technique, which is like a gap and a half? Yeah, and he did it against Ohio State too. Problem was, when you do that over and 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 over again, Ohio State goes, hey, they're trying to reach the three tech, so just get upfield. And then they had guys that are big and long and explosive, and they put him in the backfield. So is he dominant? I think in certain aspects of his game, yes, absolutely. He can pull. He can get out in the open. I think he's another guy, like, if he goes into a zone blocking system, one of those really pure outside zone systems, it's too bad that he had to graduate. I think he'd be really good for Andy Kotelnicki because, you know, space and pay, you know, getting athletic offensive linemen against linebackers and corners and things like that. I think he'd be really good at that. In the NFL, finding a guy, the Green Bay Packers, I think would be awesome a spot for Hunter Norzad. I just pull in one of those, the San Francisco 49ers. How about that? Like the actual Shanahan system. I think he'd be good at that. So this is a guy that I think some people see as a day three prospect, but could be a, you know, third round guy, maybe early fourth. So there's a lot of variability, depending on what teams see in these players. So Penn State losing three really good offensive linemen. And then the last guy, cause we could talk about all the guys in the draft, but I just got to give a shout out to my guy, Curtis Jacobs, because first off, I'm going to tell you a quick story and some of the frustrations that happen here on the show. So I was at the NFL or the Penn State Pro Day, and legitimately Curtis is a fan of the show. He said that on the show. He said that to us privately. He is the nicest dude. He comes over and says hi to me, gives me a bro hug anytime he sees me. And he says, hey, let's get me on the show. I want to talk to you, you know, before the draft. And I was like, awesome. So I get his agent's phone number. I text his agent and here we are. Never heard back. So if Curtis, if you're watching this, if somehow this gets to you, I want you to know I wanted to have you on the show, but there are just certain things that, you know, are beyond my control. But here's the interesting thing about Curtis. Let's talk about him as a player. Let's talk about his fit in the NFL. Can he play in the box? Can he play a Will or a Mike linebacker position? It is not a no. It's a question. And I think it was a really interesting choice by Curtis to bulk up to 241 pounds and to maybe sacrifice a little bit of speed, but still running a 4.58 at 240. That's, I almost used a swear. That's really bleeping good to be able to run that fast. And when you have the coverage ability that he shows on film, you feel confident that somewhere in the middle, maybe he's 237 in the NFL and not 245 or whatever, that you've got a box linebacker that can cover, which is maybe more important than anything in the NFL right now, and a dude that's athletic and can move. The question I have is, how much did he get a chance to play, like really learn to play in the box? So let's do a rewind. And let's talk about Penn State's linebacker situation. I wrote about this at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com last year. This is how it generally goes. Guys that play at Penn State play the Sam linebacker position out in the field. In college, that's a position. In the NFL, it doesn't exist. That guy's a slot corner. He's a nickel. Most of the NFL plays nickel. And if they're not playing an extra defensive back, they're playing five defensive linemen. So Curtis was playing a position that doesn't exist in the NFL. In 2022, the year he was going to prove that he can be a box linebacker, because that's how it goes at Penn State, is guys who play in the field generally then, as they get older and stronger and bigger, play in the box. So he does that, and he's getting his, you know, bearings on it. I don't know that he was doing great in terms of, like, you know, standout first rounder, but right when you would think that he's kind of catching his stride, hey, Abdul Carter's a thing. And he made they made the decision to play him back at Sam linebacker, where admittedly he was more comfortable. He made more plays. He looked confident and good at football there. And then he bounced back between the two positions. But I never feel like he got an actual chance to play Will linebacker and to really focus and be good at it. So then the question is, at 240, is he trying to be a Mike? Is he trying to play middle linebacker? Because here's the thing, like, in the NFL, again, I started this show telling you that I'm a Bills fan. Terrell Bernard's 225 and plays Mike linebacker for the Bills. So there's no size requirements on linebackers anymore. That's over with. You know, again, like, just to reference the Bills, Matt Milano's maybe 230 at Will? Maybe? And by the way, he's like 5'11 and a half, 5'11 and three quarters. Like, he's 6 foot on the roster, sure, but, like, the size thing is a little bit overblown. It's how the scheme uses you. Do you have the defensive line to protect and allow you to run to the football? And how good are you in coverage? Can you stop Travis Kelce in the playoffs? And Curtis Jacobs has the physical skills and the tape to say, yeah, like, put him in the right situation where he's not playing in the field, where he's not having to cover a slot receiver. Can he cover tight ends? Can he cover guys on the backside? Can he squeeze those passing lanes into the boundary? Yeah. So this is not a good linebacker class in terms of guys in the top first round. So you're telling me you got a guy that is 240 pounds, good coverage player, runs of the 4.5s, you feel like can be faster than his timed speed, and has other really good metrics. Like, you look at what he did in the combine and pro day and all those things, explosive numbers, all those things. Right now, I think he's a fifth round pick on most boards. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a fifth round pick. I also wouldn't be surprised if there's a team out there that projects all of those tools and they draft him a little higher, because there aren't a lot of guys that have the height, weight, speed, all those things in one package. And I don't know that Curtis does. But like I said, I really like Curtis Jacobs, so I'm assuming the positive here. I'm going to assume that he can do it. Really smart guy, by the way. Loves football. And I know we say that about everybody, right? But he and I were having a conversation. You can go check out the video here on our YouTube channel. I said, like, you know, when you're done with football, what do you want to do? And he's like, I want to be a coach. So this is a dude who really, like, gets into the X's and O's, gets into the understanding what he's being asked to do. I think he's a Mike. I think that's where he can play in the NFL, especially in the right system. Like, I think he's got to go into a system like Penn State had with Manny Diaz and, you know, Brent Pry and all the coaches he played for. So he's not going to be a thumper between the tackles, sort of like dominant run defender. But here's the thing. I don't want that in the NFL. I want a big ass one tech up front to stop the run. I want an athletic linebacker that can shoot into gaps and get tackles. Yeah, I don't want people that are weak, but I think it's more about athleticism in space than it is about, you know, how big are your traps and can you put the crown of your helmet through that guy's soul. You need some of that. You need a little bit of that, but I don't think you need to, like, we don't need to lean into that as much as we always we talk about with Mike linebackers. Goody, he says, showed up late to the show, got a rewatch, big Jets fan and Penn State alum, drafting Olu, made up for missing out on Roma Dunze. Yeah. Check out the beginning of the show, went into all of that stuff. And once again, thanks for hanging out with me. I haven't been able to talk draft with anybody, really, because, like, my cats don't care, is sitting at home here. So this is good. This is therapy for me. 55 minutes of therapy. Hopefully you got something out of it. Hopefully if you're a Jets fan or your team drafts any of the Penn State players we talked about on day two, or if they bleed into day three, you know a little bit more about these Penn State guys. Of course, we'll have reaction videos coming up next week. Maybe we'll do this again on Monday and talk about where everybody went and all of their fits and all those things on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Again, like I said, we haven't done a Friday show in a long time, probably since the season. And I was not sure who was going to show up for surprise. We're live. And the fact that we got everybody here to have a conversation, thank you. This is fun. I appreciate that. I appreciate you indulging me. And hopefully, like I said, you got something out of it. I'm Thomas Rancar. This is the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel. We'll talk to you later.